You know, we all love a great story, especially one with a happy ending. There are lots of folks who struck it rich in rock and roll, but who were the rockers who overcame the most to achieve the most? This week, we're going to count down rock's greatest rags-to-riches stories.
You're listening to the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus, changing rock history one podcast at a time.
All right, everybody, welcome back. It is once again the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus Podcast. Coming at you live on Rock Rage Radio Live on Facebook. We're all over the place. You can find us on YouTube, Periscope, a couple of different Facebook channels as well. So check us out. LudiniRockAndRollCircus.com. Undergoing major renovations here in the next couple months. There's going to be a lot of cool stuff coming up, so check it out. Started a new series this week where I'm talking about lyrics. And if you'd like to know more about that, go to LouLombardiRocks.com. That's our private area where you get access to exclusive content that you can't get anyplace else. It's also a very cool place for awesome people who love great guitar-driven rock to congregate and to talk about music throughout the day. No politics, no religion, no social justice BS, just great music with great awesome people. You are listening to Ludini Rock and Roll Circus, and a shout out to our affiliate out there, Rock Rage Radio. Go to rockrageradio.com, download the app, and you can listen to great guitar-driven rock 24/7. So it is an awesome thing. And Lily, I think I'm missing Chris Thunderwolf's card.
Uh-oh.
Do you see it over there?
Yep.
All right, now give a shout out to our unofficial but sort of official sponsor, Wolf's Customs. You want to go to wolfscustoms.online and get yourself a custom painted guitar. Who the hell wants to get on stage with the same old blah, blah, blah guitar, black, blue, whatever, you know, sunburst? Get Chris Thunderwolf Dotson at wolfscustoms.online to really trick out your ride so that you get on stage with a badass looking guitar that will stand out. I mean, the people want a show. I don't want to see the same boring whatever, all right? So get your ass to wolfscustoms.online. Get yourself custom painted guitar. Now, speaking of custom painting, we have the incomparable, the unbelievable, the undeniably talented and gorgeous goddess herself, Lily V6, with us tonight. What's up,
what
Lily?
What does that mean, speaking of custom? Hi.
Hi.
So, fun things I did this weekend.
Lily did some fun stuff this weekend. Lily tried to be a bartender, and how did that go?
I tried to be a bartender. I think I did a great job for being the only one there. But I'm telling you what, props to anybody who is a bartender. I cannot do it as well as you.
Wait, they asked you to guest bartend, and you were the only bartender?
Yeah, I think the other girls didn't show, which is fine. More money for me. I got all the tips. But
I know, but I mean, you've never done it before, that's really throwing you to the wolves.
It was difficult, but I managed. First drink was the hardest. Somebody ordered a Long Island. Freaking clue what's in a Long Island. However, the girls on the other side of the bar who were working at the actual social club helped me out with that, and everything else was simple. But like I said, props to any bartender. You guys are amazing, because I don't know that I could do that all the time.
Well, in 2 weeks, on October 27th, as well as November 2nd, there's going to be a really cool band there with some other bands, a band called 20,000 Metal Dicks. And there's a rumor that Ludini himself may or may not be playing in those shows. I'm just saying. Did you confirm that with them? Let them know that we're playing both of them.
I will confirm it.
Let them know,
Josh.
Please. So some cool stuff coming up, some live stuff, and we're going to be taking this out in public very soon. We're just, I think we kind of maybe need to get through Halloween and everything first.
Yeah.
And do a couple of things, and then we're going to go out and do some stuff. We are kicking around.
I feel like November will be a little slower.
Yeah.
With events.
Yeah, I mean, there's just stuff going on with her and I, and I'm prepping this new band. I do have a new band. Right now, we're tentatively called 20,000 Metal Dicks. We aren't promoting or anything like that. We're just going to go out and kind of feel it out and see how it's going to go. I've got awesome players in this band. It is a really good band. So We just need to get out there and shake the dust off. We're playing a Halloween party, a private event on Saturday this week. That's going to be our maiden voyage. It's going to be fun. So we're going to be talking tonight about the greatest rock and roll and metal rags to riches stories out there. The artists that like were really in bad freaking shape, but found their way to fame and fortune. Kind of like, you know, there's so many tragedies that you think of in rock. Everybody knows the Janis Joplins and the Jimi Hendrixes and the Jim Morrisons and the Brian Jones and the 27 Club and all that stuff.
Hoopla.
But there are a lot of people that like got into this business and they done well for themselves. You know, it really turned out really, really well for them, and they're very happy and very satisfied, still doing it. Some of them with us, some of them not. That doesn't mean they weren't successful. They just, you know, rock and roll's, you know, what, 60 years old or so?
Oh, and I know you don't like talking about it, but did you see the nominees came out for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
We will get to that in another podcast.
Okay.
So, anyways, we're going to jump in with a band called 13 Saints. Love this band. Played them a few months ago. Thought I'd get it back out. 13 Saints, New York Doll on the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus.
Working for the LDS. A little bit of structure is always for the best, but he barely made it back from the meltdown fest.
New York Doll by 13 Not 13 ghosts. I knew that's what you thought I was going to say. 13 saints. Let's go ahead and promote little 13 saints for you. You want to go to, right now it's a Facebook page. Facebook.com/PG/13 Saints Rock. I believe the PG is a abbreviation for Pittsburgh.
That's legit.
There is so much great music from this area, though.
There really is.
I mean, just like it has really, when I was a wee lad, if I may digress for just a second, I know we have a topic to get into, but just real quick, when I was a wee lad, like even when I was in my 20s and, you know, my bands were playing with all the other Pittsburgh bands, there was still kind of a Pittsburgh sound, and you could kind of tell a local band right away. That's not true anymore. Like, you listen to a local band, and they could be from anywhere in the world.
There's quite a mix.
Yeah, and there's a great mix too. There's a lot of metal and heavy rock and stuff in Pittsburgh too. You know, we're gonna play some Silk Nine a little bit later on, and that's a great heavy band from the area. So if you love heavy music and you're in town, you might want to check it out. So let's get into this tonight. We're talking about the greatest rock and metal rags to riches stories. And I have somebody on my list. This person is probably on your list as well. So I'm not going to steal your thunder. But Lily's our sort of resident rock historian. So how we do it on the show, if you're new, is she sort of brings up the topic and then we kind of talk about it and I give some commentary. And if I don't know anything to say, I might yell curse words. But
or sing or play air guitar.
I might play air
or
guitar.
Or what have you.
Yeah. Rub my head and pat my belly at the same time. Something.
Can you do that?
I don't know.
Okay.
So what do we got, Lily?
So I have like one or two that aren't necessarily rock, but we'll get to them later. The first one I want to mention is John Resnick from the Goo Goo Dolls. Born in Buffalo, New York. His dad died from a diabetic coma in 1981. And Resnick was only 15 at the time. And then his mother died October 26, 1982. So he lost his parents pretty close. He had to be, and she died from a heart attack. His sisters had to take care of the family with some help from a cousin, but he did pay for his own apartment using Social Security survivor benefits. And he ended up attending McKinley Vocational High School. That's where he started playing guitar. And he dropped out of Buffalo College, State College, and then he formed a band and became the Goo Goo Dolls in 1985. And they released their first album, what they call their first album. It's not really their first album, on a $750 budget. And then they got picked up by Metal Blade, and now we know them as the Goo Goo Dolls.
What do you mean, not really their first album?
It's not their first mainstream album. It's their first before they were popular album.
But their breakout album was A Boy Named Goo.
Yes, correct.
Why the hell do they call themselves the Goo Goo Dolls?
I used to know this, and I don't know that anymore. Weren't they supposed to be something odd? Something really weird?
Yeah, because the Goo Goo Dolls, that's a totally great name. a terrible name. We've done shows on like hated bands, and this band comes up a lot.
Yeah,
and, you know, they get lumped in there with Creed and Nickelback and a lot of these Dave Matthews and stuff like that.
But out of that grouping, I do like the Goo Goo Dolls. I don't like the other ones. Me no likey Creed or Nickelback. So,
yeah. John had a rough beginning, but you know, it's great to hear that. You know, that you know, these guys can do something like that. So John Resnick from the Goo Goo Dolls. Who you got next?
The next one isn't so country, but I do like to talk. Or isn't so country. Well, she's country. I like to talk about her. Dolly Parton. She was born in a one-room cabin in Pittman Center, Tennessee. Fourth of 12 children. Her father was a sharecropper. He had his own small farm, but still had to do side jobs to make ends meet. I mean, they had 12 kids. You know, you got to sort of figure that one out.
Somebody should have bought them a television set for their bedroom.
That would have been nice for their one room. She referred to her family as dirt poor. They paid doctor's bills with bags of cornmeal. But she used her poverty as an inspiration to write her songs, which she has many great songs about her family. She received her first guitar at age 8 from her uncle. And, of course, her earliest performances, as most country people performers are, is in church, as you know. And she recorded a song at 13 and performed at the Grand Ole Opry, where she met Johnny Cash, who told her to follow her instincts with her career. And right after high school, she moved to Nashville and had a success as a songwriter with Combine Publishing, and then marketed herself as a bubblegum pop singer. And she developed her persona with the wigs and the nails and, you know, the boobs and the whole costuming and everything. And she just became her own thing. And She was on the Porter Wagner Show as a regular, and now she has her own theme park, and she's an actress.
Dolly World, and she's an actress. And at what, she's got to be, what, close to 80?
I have no idea. Yeah, she's
I don't know if I'd kick her out of bed.
I mean, she's hot still.
Yeah, I think she's an attractive lady. I want to, this is my Dolly Parton story.
Oh, no. You have one?
Well, it's not a personal story about me and Dolly Parton, but this is interesting. This is to show you what a classy person Dolly Parton is. Dolly Parton, as you mentioned, was on the, got her start on the Porter Wagner Show. Mm-hmm. Porter had her wrapped up in a contract. She had an opportunity. She saw. She knew that she was talented. She knew that she had to go out and do her own thing. And he was like, no way. And she left, and there was a giant legal battle. And everybody sued everybody. And Porter was very personally hurt, very angry with Dolly Parton. They weren't speaking for the for a very, very long time. Well, 10 years or so down the road, you know, Dolly Parton had, in this meantime, had always said that, Porter, I love you. You gave me my start, and I owe you everything. 10 years down the road, Porter Wagner falls on hard times. Has to sell his entire catalog, all his publishing. Dolly Parton steps in. She's a millionaire now, and she buys the publishing. Bails him out.
She's a classy lady.
She totally bails him out, and then a few years later, he's on his feet again. He says, I want to buy back my publishing. She says, I will sell it to you for $1.
She's awesome.
Because she said, you gave me my start. I will love you forever, and I will always stand by you. And that's the kind of person you're dealing with when you're talking about Dolly Parton. So, you know, I don't know if that has to do with humble beginnings. Maybe that does. Maybe
it absolutely
comes
has
from
to.
Like, you know, hey, I came from crap, and this guy really helped me, and I can't totally turn my. Even when sometimes she knew she had to make a break. She knew because we had to have the Dolly Parton we all know and love.
Yeah,
the world wouldn't have been the same.
I love her laugh. It's the cutest.
Thing. Yeah, she's got it. Yeah.
Oh, she's 73.
She's 73. God bless her.
Yes, and she actually took her look from a local prostitute in town. With the big hair, the fingernails, the whole thing. She thought she was the most beautiful woman in the world. So that's what she wanted to look like.
And she wrote one of my favorite songs of all time. I would definitely put this in one of my favorite songs of all time. Jolene. Amazing song.
Oh, yeah. That's a great song.
Amazing song. It's been covered a million different times. It's such a great song. You could get played on a freaking kazoo and it would get over. So anyway, so Dolly Parton is on our list. So who you got next?
Next, I have Isaac Brock on my list from Modest Mouse. Sorry, I'm a little gassy with burping tonight. He was poor, was born poor, and it just got worse from there. After his parents divorced, he spent his childhood and youth living it with relatives, friends' houses, trailer parks. He squatted in abandoned properties in Washington State. Music lovers, however, flocked to their early indie rock releases because they told sad, angry stories, you know, that whole genre of music that everybody's sad now. And after only a handful of years in the indie circuit mainstream, Discovery landed the band prime spots at major alternative rock festivals and collaborations with some of the biggest musicians in the industry. And he is worth about $4.5 million today. Lived in abandoned houses.
You know, and that is, I mean, that's not insanely rich, but that is great for a band that is a cool band, very good band, but they're not on the same level as Van Halen.
Oh, well, no.
Or Kiss, or one of those type of bands. But still, like, goes to show you play the cards right, some cool crap can happen. Who is watching out there? And do we have any comments or
we
questions?
We do. let me pull this up here. Rock Rage Radio Asia wants me to do a shout out to Burger Kill. They're on tour now, USA, number one metal band from Indonesia.
Burger Kill.
Bar Pilashevsky, the Goo Goo Dolls were awesome when they first started out, more heavy punk sounding, not like when they went mainstream. That's true. They did sort of change their sound there. Bill Damiano, Silk Nine is great. 20,000 Little Dicks with a question mark from Eric Ernst.
Oh, you're Eric, you're funny. 20,000 Metal Dicks. But that is funny. I have to tell the guys, 20,000 Little Dicks. Everybody will laugh.
Chris Thunderwolf, Hello Lily Six, and Lou Lombardi from Wolf Customs, Raven and Wolf here. We got Jerry Chambers watching. Of course, Billy Altman and Robert Z's Sonic Octane arrived. Bam, I don't know what that means. But cool, it's probably a band. And that's who we got so far.
Awesome, guys. This is a guy named Lou Lombardi. He keeps sending me his stuff, insisting that I play it. He's a total pain in the ass. So if I don't play the song, like, he comes and sits on my porch. It's really embarrassing. This is Where Have All the Acid Queens Gone on the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. Where? I gotta know. Where have all the acid queens gone? Go to LouLombardiMusic.com. You can find out more about that there. Okay, so we are talking about the Rags to Riches. It's Rags to Riches. Stories in rock.
Wow.
I don't know. I'm just in one of those kind of moods.
It's one of those nights, huh?
One of those crazy old nights. Rags to Riches stories in rock. We had a few different people here. We ventured slightly outside of rock, but I think Dolly Parton is one of those people that if rock people don't like, they at least respect. I mean, I don't think anybody can say anything about the song Jolene. But we started with, we talked about John Resnick from the Goo Goo Dolls, Dolly Parton, and Isaac Brock from Modest Mouse. If you're from Pittsburgh, it's Modest Mouse.
I don't say it like that.
You could go down to Modest Mouse show. I heard you're coming. You're pretty good. Isaac Brock, he's all right. He ain't no Don Yars. So, Lily, who do you got next on the list?
The next on the list is one I found, David Geffen.
What? He's not in rock. What are you talking about? Talk about Willis.
Give me a break. Grew up poor in Brooklyn, lived in a one-bedroom apartment with his family, and slept on the couch. He did awful in high school and flunked out of college. However, he had a natural gift in spotting and developing musical talent, and he learned the business sense from his mom. This made him a millionaire by the time he was 26 years old.
Wow,
He is also a renowned art collector and philanthropist and is worth about $4.6 million. This makes him one of the richest behind-the-scenes players in showbiz. I thought that was interesting because I was going for more musicians, but I found David Geffen on there.
That's good. And David Geffen is responsible for a lot of amazing music like Guns N' Roses. David, I believe, is some uncle or in-law relative of Slash.
Yeah, I think I heard that too.
Yeah, he's some relative of Slash. So
we all know Slash didn't really grow up more.
Yeah, what can you say? But David Geffen of Geffen Records.
Super important guy in rock.
Very important
guy. And music.
And music, totally. For sure. So who's next?
Next on my list is Mr. Elvis Presley. He spent his childhood years living around the Great Depression. His father was a farm worker and his mother was a sewing machine operator. They lived in a two-bedroom
house.
Well,
wait a minute. That's a career? Sewing machine operator.
I mean, it could be.
I guess in the 50s.
In the back, maybe with the looms.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I guess that was how clothes were made. They weren't made by, like, slave workers in China
or
whatever.
Not just yet.
Well, it was like before that. So they had Elvis's mom
do all the clothes. Yeah. She made everyone's clothes then.
Well, that's what they say is, he put on a shirt that his mama made. And that's, he goes on to Ed Sullivan. And next thing you know, he's Elvis the Pelvis.
They lived in a two-bedroom house that they were only able to afford because of a loan from a local dairy farmer. Things got worse when his father was sent to prison for forging an $8 check. This is how poor they were. He forged an $8 check. $8, back then. The dairy farmer who was...
$8 back then was probably maybe the equivalent of maybe, what, 50?
Probably.
Something like that.
The dairy farmer who loaned them the money for the house called in the note and forced Elvis and his mother to move. He received his first guitar as a birthday present. Just as things were getting worse for his family financially. During high school, Elvis worked various jobs and used what money that didn't go to his family to start creating his image. And after school, he got a job as a truck driver and stopped by the Memphis recording studio to cut a record as a birthday present for his mommy. Caught the attention of Sam Phillips, who introduced him to Scotty Moore, and we know the rest. And there it is.
You know, let me just talk about something that's very interesting that people do not, a lot of people don't understand about Elvis. You know, he gets on the Ed Sullivan show, and it's this thing comes out that, well, Ed Sullivan says we can only shoot you from the waist up because everything from the waist is too vulgar.
It's moving too much.
And the papers started calling him Elvis the Pelvis and things like that. What people don't know, and this went on for a long time, and Elvis took offense to it and everything. Well, it turns out that was all feigned. Elvis is like taking offense. It was all a total act.
What?
Colonel Tom Parker.
Yes, I read about that guy.
told the camera people at the Ed Sullivan show, you can't film him from, you have to film him from the waist up because people in America will faint. It's like going to be too much.
The girls will go crazy.
Right. So they spread this thing that they created this whole thing about Elvis. Oh my God, it's too vulgar. You can't see it. We can't even film it. Where Ed Sullivan won't even show it.
Oh, the media.
So he built this whole thing and Elvis feigned like being offended. It's in the movie where Kurt Russell plays Elvis, where there's a scene where he's reading a review or something like that. Elvis the Pelvis, that's just child. He's like upset and everything. But that was all BS. Tom Parker was behind all of that to kind of help,
the image.
The other thing that people don't realize about Elvis is a lot of people. And I remember my parents telling me this, They were like, Lou, like when we heard Elvis, we didn't know what he looked like. We just heard we thought that he was black.
I can see that.
They thought that he was black. And a lot of those Sun artists, people thought were black. And it's, you guys don't understand, like we live in a different world today, but that was like one of the worst, like, you know, white America. It was okay, like, you know, but you couldn't like have black kids and white kids, like, because God forbid, what if like black boys and white girls or white boys and black girls start like, you know, canoodling, rocking and rolling, as Alan Freed called it, in the back seats of cars, you know, people were throwing babies in the air, all kind of stuff was happening.
Wow, wait, what?
So that was the sort of appeal, was these artists were kind of bridging that gap between, and they were all big, they would listen to AM radio very late at night, and all of them have told the same story. Elvis has talked about it, Johnny Cash has talked about it, Jerry Lee Lewis has talked about it, Conway Twitty, all those early Sun artists have talked about how they listened to AM radio. This is another thing you guys don't get. Before there was the internet, how you got the really deep, like, indie music is you listened to AM real late at night when all the local stations were off the air, and you would get these stations from really far away, and you would, a lot of times they heard music from, like, south of the border, and they got to hear like hardcore rhythm and blues and things like that, Robert Johnson records, things like that. And that was what these guys were doing, was they fell in love with that music, but they were white. So that's kind of how rock got started. It was a really amazing thing that happened in music history, and we owe everything that we do here and that you guys love. Even if you say, well, I don't like rock, I listen to hip hop or whatever, you owe it to the early rockers, because those guys
wouldn't exist.
Started bringing this out, bridging that gap. So really fun facts there. Elvis, I mean, can't say enough about the king. Everybody will sing like the king. Uh-huh. Get that Elvis lip.
I love Elvis.
You don't want to be doing that Billy Idol lip.
Yeah, it was just a little curl.
You got to get the little curl, subtle, subtle. So we talked about David Geffen. We talked about Elvis, the Pelvis Presley. Who you got next, girl?
I got another sort of country guy, Johnny Cash. He's my last country guy, though. Was raised as the child of a cotton farming family during the Great Depression. Things were bleak for him and his family financially from the beginning. To add to his suffering, his older brother, Jack, was killed in an accident at a sawmill that he worked at. After he got married and left the army, he was working as an appliance salesman, and he worked up the courage to audition again for Sam Phillips at Sun Records. This led to the permanent end to his poverty and his life, basically. And he served some great hits from all of that woe and everything and all the things.
Dirt poor, like Ray Charles and like a lot of people of that ilk. And you know,
you get the best music out of people who've lived like that, though, I think, because it's truth.
I mean, I was talking to some people about this a couple weeks ago, that I think that some rough times, even if they're self-inflicted rough times, you know, with drugs or alcohol or whatever, I think can, it in the right way, bring you some soul. Not always, and I'm not telling people they should go out and become alcoholics and I'll make their music better, but there is something to that. I mean, that's what the blues was born out of. That's why that music was so powerful, is it was born out of people's pain as a way to sort of overcome and deal with that. Absolutely. Johnny Cash, there's a funny meme going around the internet. Maybe you've seen, I don't know if you've seen it.
Probably. But go on.
It's like some metal guys, and they're like, oh my God, it's country music. Raise the drawbridge. And somebody goes, wait, it's Johnny Cash. Okay, lower the drawbridge. So Johnny's music really transcends. And the at the end of his life, the work he did with Rick Rubin is really, really showcases how how he could bring in so many different vibes and feelings and attitudes and really reach in a massive audience and really resonate with so many different people.
I mean, he was a badass kind of dude, though. He'd come out dressed in all black, like he's ready for someone's funeral. Like, that's a thing. I like that.
Yeah, he was dark. I mean, that was the brooding. that was the whole thing. Brooding. I mean, it was. You know, Sam Phillips thought that out of all of his artists, he thought that Johnny Cash was the bigger talent,
really?
Even more than Elvis.
Huh.
In fact, he even told Elvis, "Boy, you ain't no Johnny Cash."
Did he cry?
I don't know.
Probably.
But he did tell him that, and so Johnny, man, you don't want to mess with no Johnny Cash. Johnny Cash, he's a bad MF-er. So let's do one more, and we'll go to another song.
So my next one on my list is Ringo Starr, one of the luckiest
Richard
men.
Starkey.
Sure. Is that his real name? One of the luckiest men in you rock history with a rough beginning. He was born to a very poor parents who scraped by owning a bakery. They lived in a 6-room terrace in a poor working class area of Liverpool. His father left when he was 3, forcing his mom to move into an even poorer area. And that's where he lived until the Beatles thing came along. You know, that pesky little band. He also had a series of illnesses that led him to not be able to go to school, appendicitis, resulting 10 weeks in a coma, falling out of bed just to put him back in the hospital for a few more weeks. His mother remarried in 1953, but that same year Ringo developed pleurisy, okay, which kept him out of school for another 2 years. So instead of going back, he did odd jobs for money until he got one of the greatest drumming gigs the world has ever known with the Beatles.
And to think that we almost didn't have Ringo.
Yeah.
We almost had Pete Best and Stuart Sutcliffe. Stuart Sutcliffe was the original bass player. Paul McCartney was a guitar player. A lot of people don't realize that. We almost didn't have him.
He almost died how many times?
George Martin said that the reason he was able to do with all that really revolutionary stuff with the mixes with the Beatles, all the editing and cutting and pasting this into that, you know, before the computers, guys, I'm saying cutting and pasting, I'm literally talking about taking tape and cutting it with a razor blade and pasting it to another piece of
not
tape.
Like on your little computers where you go
right
broop, 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 and it's done.
Yeah, and where if you get it wrong, you're totally screwed,
you're effed with a big.
But he said the reason he was able to do that was because Ringo's a metronome. His timing is just so freaking good. We did this a couple of years ago with one of my other co-hosts, where we talked about, we got into great depth about the song A Day in the Life, and I don't want to get into that here, but there's some Ringo magic involved with how that was put together as well with the rhythm. So, you know, he's not a drummer like, he wasn't a superstar drummer like Keith Moon or John Bonham, but he did. He was the perfect drummer for the Beatles, absolutely. And he had a very interesting voice, and they liked using him. There's usually at least one Ringo tune on every Beatles album. You know, you have the Little Help from My Friends, Yellow Submarine,
his voice, yeah.
These types of songs. They gave him these types of songs. They would go, "This is good for Ringo. Ringo, you sing this one." Richard Starkey, aka Ringo Starr. This is Silk Nine. We was teasing this one earlier. Love this band. They got some kind of CD release. Do we have details about that yet or not?
Not yet.
Okay. Guys, get the details out, brothers, because we want to promote it for you. Silk Nine, I Won't Carry You on the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus.
You can't say what's in front of me.
That's Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania's premier hard rock band, Silk Nine.
Awesome, dudes.
And I believe it's something very simple like silk9.com, yeah, but let me make sure you guess. Silk Nine, number nine. Silk, number nine.
Number
no
nine.
Space, nothing.
Number nine.
Silk9.com. Great band.
Great stage.
And we're looking
too.
Forward to working with them. This year.
It's in November. We will be working with them.
We will be letting you guys know.
Give all the details.
Right now, we don't have the details yet.
Hands are tied.
But we're going to be working with them on a show. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Great band. We love them. Okay, so we just should have just a few more.
I only have one more, so if you have some after that. I know I didn't come up with 10. I have 8.
So who you got, girl?
Jimi Hendrix. Born into neglect and poverty, his father, Al, was stationed at a military base in Oklahoma. When he was released from the military, he took the task of raising his son, Jimmy. He was neglectful and abusive. He placed several of Jimmy's siblings in foster care, and he wasn't able to find employment, and that forced Jimmy and his brother to steal from local grocery stores just to eat. Jimmy was able to acquire a guitar at the age of 15 and took playing tips and advice where he could get it from. Prior to a guitar, he was playing a one-string ukulele. He fell into some legal trouble and had to go to prison or the army. He chose the army.
One string ukulele. That's
right. He did only serve 1 year in the army. Story is he said he injured himself, but nobody actually knows the reason. But then he began to pursue music full time. And he had small gigs with, you know, Little Richard, the Isley Brothers, and Ike and Tina. Just, you know, some local no-name type people.
Some people that, you know, maybe, you know.
But then he formed the Jimi Hendrix Experience in 1966. So thus he became rich. Of course, tragically, he did pass away. But, I mean, he had a good run there. he forced himself out of that poverty.
Right, right. James Marshall Hendrix. Interesting, his middle name is Marshall. I always thought that was...
Isn't that fun?
I think that's very cool. So, what can you say, you know?
He is the number one
on
my list.
He was born just like the movie... The Jerk, wait. Steve Martin, he was born a poor black child, literally.
He was, and his dad was no help, obviously. Pops.
I would, I'm going to mention somebody who I know a lot of people know who this person is, and a lot of people, this person has become in his later life kind of controversial, kind of...
You?
Yes, it's me. I'm the ultimate rock and roll rags to riches story. No, it is a guy that I'm sure you've seen live several times, and that is Gene Simmons.
Oh yes, I've seen him live several times, at least 7.
Yes, Gene Simmons, his mother was a Holocaust survivor.
I totally forgot about this.
They escaped all of that. By the skin of their teeth and migrated to Israel, and they were very, very, very poor, like uber poor, one room, him and his mom. And it was through the support of the Jewish community that he eventually was able to move himself, you know, get moved into come to New York. And it's the American dream story, and this is why, you know, Gene is a firm capitalist, you know, firm kind of like Republican kind of guy, you know, flag waver and everything, because that is his life. Some things that people don't know about Gene, just because he's done so much, he's lived so many places, he speaks at least 4 languages very, very fluently. Mm-hmm. He's not dumb.
Oh,
okay,
gosh.
he's not any kind of dummy.
Very well spoken man.
He's a smart dude. You may agree with his life and his attitudes, or you may disagree. He is a person who has not shied away from running his mouth, and that's just what he does. But comes from very, 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 very poor background. But like so many kids, saw that show. That Ed Sullivan show with the Beatles, and said, "That's what I'm doing. I don't know what else is happening, but I'm doing that.
That's my goal.
That's what's gonna happen." And if you read the book Kiss and Make Up, that is a true rags to riches story. I mean, it's just,
that's sort of the ultimate one.
Yeah,
I think.
It is.
I did not even remember that.
It really is. That, you know, living and, you know, and even after, because they did okay, you know, when they came over, they had a lot of support from the community, etc. However, when him and Paul formed Kiss, you know, they were kind of back to square one, you know, and sleeping in rehearsal studios. And he tells a funny story about, you know, they used this rehearsal studio as also a place where they would, you know, bring their lady friends. And they had put egg crates on the walls to deaden the sound. And some of the egg crates had some egg still on them. So that attracted critters. And he said that, you know, they had some mattresses there, and he was doing his thing with a young lady one night, and a cockroach crawled across her back.
Oh, God.
And she got up and ran out.
I would too. That's gross.
Another funny story is that when he was living in Israel, that there was a little girl there that he wanted to impress, and she had to take this chicken. They had bought a chicken, and they had to she was trying to take it to her house, and he picked this chicken up and carried her, and the girl was freaking out because she thought the chicken was going to peck Gene's eyes out. And he took it back, and he was very proud of himself, and he was trying to impress this girl, and the father promptly picks up the chicken and cuts his head off. And Gene, to this day, cannot eat chicken.
Oh, my God.
Because he says it was such a traumatic, and he's deathly afraid of spiders.
Oh, well, I understand that.
Do you know the story?
No.
He was in Israel again, and his mother had put his, I don't think it was his yarmulke, but it was some kind of hat on his head. And he said it wouldn't fit. Like, every time they put it on, like, it was lumpy or something. And they were fooling around. He says all of a sudden, this giant spider crawled out from underneath and crawled across his face. And he freaked out, and he's, like, deathly afraid of spiders. So just some fun facts about Gene Simmons from Kiss. A real, and there are tons of them as well. There's stories about the early metal days with, you know, Anthrax, Megadeth, Metallica, all squatting in a
friend's house.
Yeah, you know, in a building, and they would steal food to eat. Scott Ian has there's a funny story where he talks about how, you know, he said our famous meal was bologna on hand because we couldn't afford bread.
Motley Crue's groupies used to buy them hot dogs and spaghetti when they first started. Can you imagine those parts?
You guys know this is another sort of, again, showing the, you know, young and hungry guys. There's a Van Halen, when they got signed, they didn't show up to their own signing. And their manager and the record label guys are like, who doesn't show? We're giving these guys a big record contract. Where are they? And they, like, 15 minutes goes by, 20 minutes goes by, 30 minutes, 45 minutes goes by. And they look out the window and they see Eddie, Alex, David Lee Roth, and Michael Anthony completely disheveled, running as fast as they can. And they said that their car broke down like 12 blocks, and they literally ran to meet them. They were like almost 45 minutes late, but they made it. And they were just like, we're so sorry. Oh my God, please, you know. But a lot of rockers, you know, lived in screwed up
situations to get what they wanted.
Guys left their homes in Duluth or whatever and went to New York or L.A. and, like, didn't even know what they were going to do. You know, relied on the kindness of strangers.
Or slept in the bus terminal.
Slept in the bus terminal, squatted, did whatever they could to achieve their dream. And a lot of them did very, very well for themselves. Some of them, you know, left us a little too soon. Tom Petty, Prince, people like that. It's unfortunate, David Bowie. But They left us an amazing legacy. What we're gonna do is we got a few minutes left. Lily, why don't you go ahead and give any announcements or anything you'd like to share with the audience? Any parting thoughts or any comments? Any funny things that you want to?
Nobody else really commented, but we have a lot of watchers.
They're just a shame on you. But go ahead.
I am not doing my show this week, guys, so it's going to be a fill-in show this Thursday. But normally, Hot Licks with Lily Six is on Thursday nights at 6 p.m. Eastern. I am preparing to go to Scarecon, which is in Rochester, New York. It's a horror festival. There's going to be some celebrities there, and I'm going to be going live with that and representing Ludini Hard Rock Metal Circus, as well as Hot Licks with Lily Six, Rock Rage Radio, that whole thing. So no show this week, but I'll be back on again next week, promise. And Thursday, if you're interested, I'm not going to this, but Tom Kiefer of Cinderella is going to be at Jurgles. There are still tickets available for that, couple tickets. And I think that's all I have.
It's all you got
for this week.
LudiniRockAndRollCircus.com is our website. Check back often for all kind of cool updates. We are popping over to our private podcast at LouLombardiRocks.com. Go to LouLombardiRocks.com and you'll get instant access to all kind of cool stuff, including a really awesome community of people that are really crazy about great guitar-driven rock. So we do a little after show there and kind of see what's up and give you guys a preview of what we're going to talk about next week. So it's a good time. You can go to LouLombardiRocks.com. The bands that we featured today, we started with 13 Saints, facebook.com/PG/13SaintsRock. Lou Lombardi, we played go to LouLombardiMusic.com. We did a little Silk 9, Silk9.com. And we're going to wrap up with a band called State of Mind. We've had them on, played them a few times. ReverbNation.com/State of Mind 81. That means there are 80 other State of Minds. So you make sure you want to get State of Mind 81 on Reverb Nation. So, guys, thanks so much for hanging out with us. And we're going to catch you guys all on the next Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. Say, let's all pray.
was the last thing you heard. Yeah! War Dance! War Dance! War Dance!